The Capital Connection is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection. Support comes from United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining this week is New York State Comptroller, a man who I consider to be both a friend and an exemplary public servant, Tom DiNapoli. Welcome back, Tom. Always great to see you here.
Always great to be here, Alan, even during turbulent times, or maybe especially during turbulent times.
Yeah. You know, I have a fairly regular conversation with Governor Cuomo, and he's great to come on the air and talk to us. But he did mention you, and he used the appellation, your friend. And I assured him, you are my friend, and a man I respect greatly. But he is coming to you and asking you for the financial impact of COVID-19 and the stock market and the impact of New York and the world. So let's begin there.
Yeah. Well, I don't mind anybody accusing me of having a friendship with you and a great relationship. Yeah, I mean, the governor reached out to me. We spoke. As you know, they had the consensus revenue figure, adding $700 million to the revenue estimate from the executive budget proposal as they try to get into the end stage of budget negotiations to be done by April 1st. And then we have this crisis erupting. And, you know, there's always the challenge. How do you come up with, you know, reliable data in the midst of very shifting data points and events are very hard to keep up with. So as a way to try to hopefully add some thoughtful information to the discussion, Governor asked me and my team to come up with our view of where the revenue projection should be at. We have till next week to do that, so I don't have a number for you right now, but obviously the challenge for us and really for the legislature and the governor is that everything is moving so fast day to day, and at least at this point, the trends continue to be negative. You see more cases of coronavirus being diagnosed. You see the stock market, you know, it's up one day and then down 3 days significantly. President Trump gave a speech, did not seem to allay anybody's fears or concerns. We want to wait and see whether Congress can have an agreement between Republicans and Democrats on a stimulus package. It is going to be very difficult, Alan, to come up with a revenue number that we could say is an ironclad number. It's probably going to be the best guesstimate that we can come up with based on the information we have at this point in time.
Hey, Tom, so for all of those people who are listening, you know, who may not be in the weeds on this, when you say come up with a revenue number, what does that mean?
Well, you know, as part of the budget process, it starts in November with Quick Start. Different players put out projections. The governor has the executive budget proposal. Revenue forecasting consensus came out with a number between the Senate and the Assembly and the governor, adding $700 million. Well, it's very clear with what's happening with our economy now, not just the stock market, but, you know, we see what's happening with business activity, you know, restaurants being empty, tourism being impacted, NBA canceling, you know, the season, the impact of SUNY students no longer being on campuses, you know, after the 19th. I mean, all of that obviously is going to have a negative drag on economic activity and, by extension, tax collections. So in the midst of all this, the challenge is, again, by April 1st, to come up with a reasonable estimate of revenue so that they can make budget decisions that will hopefully hold together for the entire year. So it's the timing couldn't be worse, frankly, on this, Alan, in terms of getting the budget done, because you want to have as reliable a bit of data as you can have, and yet everything is everything's going from bad to worse. And part of what we need to look at is not just the data we have right now, because some of this impact is just beginning to be felt. We're going to have to look at you know, the experts that are out there, the economic prognosticators, are we in fact now headed for a recession? I mean, I think we all knew things were going to slow down at some point, but if the stock market's in bear territory, certainly the prospect of a recession in the U.S. is higher than it was before. I don't think we're quite there yet, but if as the next couple of days go by, we are headed to recession territory, that will have an impact on wages and salaries and bonuses and Wall Street and small businesses and boy, that could really have us in troubled waters for the next year or so. How you judge this, you know, kind of when the world is spinning around you, I think I also have confidence that this will settle out at some point. But the timing is very difficult. Budget has to be in place by April 1st. There were already challenges, you know, with Medicaid spending and so on. For me, Alan, pension fund, we value it March 31st. Mm-hmm. I can't think of a worse timing for us in terms of the pension fund valuation, and that number will be with us for a year. So it is a very troubling time. And if I can, Alan, comment that your friend Governor Cuomo has really been stepping up. He's been stepping up. He's been, you know, contrary to the lack of leadership out of Washington, he's been on the TV, on the media, on your show, letting people know the latest information, letting everybody know we need to be cautious, but not overreact. And I give him a lot of credit for that. But he's going to have a tough task getting everybody together to settle this budget by April 1st.
And you have a tough task, too, because some of the way people judge you is how your investments are going, and your investments are going down the hill right now, right?
I mean, and as we talked about on your show the last time, we were headed, you know, for a really good year. The first three quarters, we were up significantly. And even a week ago, you know, we were still ahead of last year. Obviously, you know, as we're speaking today, that's not the case. Although, you know, we still have 2 weeks to go. I mean, at some point, this will settle out, and there will be buy opportunities. And look, you know, at this point, it is not as bad as 08 and 09 when the stock market tanked. So there are moments where it starts to feel like that, you know, so I don't know what tomorrow will bring or next week will bring. But, we've been through tough times before. And as we say, you know, with regard to the pension fund, first of all, for our retirees out there who are listening to your show, we have plenty of money for them. They don't have to worry. And we also have a tremendous amount of liquidity. And what I mean by liquidity is we have more than enough cash on hand to pay the benefits. So there's no issue there. And certainly for the folks who are working now in state government or local government, you know, again, we're a large fund. We go into this, you know, virtually a fully funded plan. So we could weather this. But what impact will this have when I have to do the contribution rate that we charge to our government employers that we'll do later this year? You know, I don't want to signal that it could mean an uptick in the contribution rate for employers. It could, and if it comes at a time where the budget process locally and state for the state is challenged, and there's not as much money coming from Albany, it could have an impact on local government. So we are in an unexpectedly troubled time. You know, the last time we did the show, everything was looking up. We had caution. We had already lowered our assumed rate of return for the pension fund. Nobody saw the coronavirus coming, and to have this kind of at least short-term, devastating economic impact. Alan, the St. Patrick's Day parade in New York City, 250-year tradition, canceled, or at least postponed, I should say. They are going to reschedule it. We've never had that happen before. I think it shows the magnitude of what we're facing right now.
Now, what about this tax collections question? We're hearing that the feds are thinking about extending the tax deadline. How will that affect New York State?
You know, hard to tell, you know, how many would be allowed to take advantage of that and what that would really mean. I would anticipate that, you know, again, without knowing what they're really thinking, if there is an extension, it would probably be, you know, a short-term extension, not a very long one. So I don't know that it would have any direct impact, and it might only apply to either individuals that may be, you know, suffering from the virus or for businesses that may be significantly impacted. So I mean, I think it's too soon to tell whether it would have any impact on our collections, and it might mean a slight delay in some of the collections, but I don't think it would have a huge negative impact, at least with what I'm hearing of how they're talking about framing it.
Now, I have read many times about the New York State Rainy Day Fund. Do we have a rainy day fund now? And isn't this the time to use it?
Well, it could be. The problem we have is that our rainy day fund is inadequate. You know, when we sounded the we've been sounding the alarm on this for a period of time, and in fact, we came up with an updated proposal for us to really boost up our reserves. We look at the statutory rainy day reserve funds. They've got a little over $2 billion in there. It's only about a third of what they're authorized. There are some other contingency funds that are out there, but when you look at the rainy day funds that other states have, our percentage of general fund spending is less than 3%. The national median for states is having 7.5%. So well before this situation, we had recommended that we, within the next 5 years, get to that statutory level of authorization of 7%, and then over a longer period of time, really get to 10%, because those rainy day funds are not meant for a short-term budget gap or deficit. It's meant for events that are a significant economic impact, like 9/11, like the global financial crisis. We could be in that kind of a storm again right now. And if we were better prepared with those rainy day funds, it would be something for us to draw on. It would make the budget process go a lot more smoothly. Unfortunately, we're not as prepared with those rainy day funds, those reserve funds, as we should have been.
So how much is there now? Do we know what percent?
A little over $2 billion in the statutory. And there are some other unallocated funds that are available. But you know, we had said during the good times, put more money into the reserves. And they did start to do that last year, Alan. We gave credit to the governor and legislature for the $250 million that they put in as part of last year's budget process, and they were scheduled to put some more in. But, you know, let's just say the storm clouds ended up gathering and the sky ended up opening, you know, sooner than anybody had anticipated. You know, it's easy to look back hindsight and say we should have done more. And we've been saying that, but we're not as well prepared with those reserves as we could have been, given what we're going through right now.
Now, we've all heard about, or many of us have heard about, the $6 billion that we're behind the eight ball on in New York State that we owe, a deficit in terms of the budget. What's happening with that?
Well, that's the focus of the negotiations that we're proceeding. And now the curveball of what's happening with coronavirus. So a big part of that is dealing with the overspending in Medicaid. The Medicaid redesign team came up with some preliminary review of recommendations, but, you know, certainly they haven't been final. You know, when you look at this coronavirus crisis as, I mean, look, it's a public health crisis. One would anticipate that the spending on health care, including on Medicaid, is only going to go up even higher now in response to this crisis. One of the things that I know is being debated in Washington, and let's hope they can, even in a challenging election year, national election year, they come up with a bipartisan consensus, would be to assist states with the health care spending that has to be increased because of the response to coronavirus. So, you know, perhaps if there is a silver lining to all of this, if we could get more federal support for our Medicaid spending, that might help relieve some of the burden. But, you know, the Medicaid redesign team had a daunting task to begin with, $2.5 billion in savings they had to identify without impacting on recipients of the services or shifting costs to localities. And, you know, that was a tough task to begin with.
How did they do that?
Even tougher. Well, they haven't come up with the answer yet. And as you know, in the governor's budget proposal, there was a lot of concern that when you looked at the fine print of what was being laid out there, that it really had the impact of transferring costs back to the local level after a period of years where, in fact, the state had capped Medicaid growth, and the state had been picking up an increasing share of the local cost of Medicaid. And based on how the parameters that were in place in the executive budget proposal, it was shifting costs back to local level. I mean, New York City alone was estimating a billion-dollar hit. So I know that, you know, in the Association of Counties, very outspoken, our county executives, Democrat and Republican, had been speaking out against this. So we don't know the answer to that yet. But again, in the context of a budget that clearly will not have the revenue that we thought it was going to have. How will that impact on that question of how we deal with the Medicaid spending? So again, the gap in the budget, we have to keep this in mind, Alan. The budget proposal is larger than the current year budget. It's because of spending commitments under current law and projected growth in spending based on the programs that we have in New York. That's where the gap is. So, you know, we had a gap in terms of the trend lines. Now, if we're going to have a big revenue hit because of the economic disruption from coronavirus, you know, we could be in a severe negative downturn in the revenue. And then how you put a budget together, where you were debating of how much growth to have in which programs. You know, again, I don't want to predict gloom and doom at this point, but, you know, the potential for this to be an incredibly difficult budget to put together without having an impact at the local level, it's a tough one. Just think of one sector, tourism. You know, New York is so dependent on tourism. We have a diversified economy, but tourism is big. You know, travel bans, you know, folks not wanting to leave their homes. I mean, that's going to have a big and the ripple effect on restaurants and small businesses. I mean, that, you know, right there, it's a very, very significant area. Wall Street, 70% of our revenue comes just from Wall Street. We're going to put out our bonus report, you know, for last year. And the bonuses will probably be pretty close to what they were in the past. But for the year coming forward, which is what we have to base our budget on as we move forward, does anybody think with where we're sitting right now that it's going to be a great year for Wall Street or for bonuses?
So let me stop you right there, Tom.
Even if we get to a more level position, it's going to take a while to dig out from this.
I think somebody who's listening may not understand why these bonuses for these executives and salespeople on Wall Street are so important. It's important, right? Correct me if I'm wrong, because we tax them.
We tax them, and you know, I always say, whether you love Wall Street or you hate it, it's a very financial services, securities industry, very big contributor to our city and our state's economy, and for our state revenue, 17% of it comes from the tax revenue generated by that one sector.
Really?
It's a big driver of state. In fact, the state is even more dependent on the tax revenue from Wall Street, even more so than the city. So it's concerning. It's a very concerning moment right now.
And we never want to let that stock exchange get away and cross the river and go over to New Jersey, which every once in a while they threaten us with, right?
Well, and you know, with technology today, it's a lot easier to be, you know, to be mobile. But no, we want New York to continue to be the global capital for finance. We want Wall Street to be responsible. And I think, Alan, one important point, because people have asked me, you know, is this going to be like 08 and 09? Thankfully, you know, with the Obama era changes as far as financial regulation, you know, certainly we don't have an issue today of the banking system being broken, which is very different than what we went through a decade ago. So that's why I feel this is some roller coaster, and so far we're only going down. But it certainly, in terms of the fundamentals, we're not in as exposed a position as we were 10 years ago. So very concerned about where we're at today, but hopeful that we'll be able to weather this. And that's where, again, it gets back to, right, psychology, not just for the people on Wall Street, but for the larger community. What are we doing? I mean, the governor's been right to say, the inadequacy of testing. We need to know the magnitude of the problem of this coronavirus. What I just see today, we've tested 11,000 people in the country. South Korea, testing 10,000 a day. So this is, again, where we need Washington to step up to the plate, get those kits out there. Governor has now been contracting with private labs so that we can have more testing available in New York. Where's the leadership from a public health perspective? We should be making sure that Fauci and the public health professionals are driving the train on this. And you know, there's a real concern that, you know, they're getting interference
from the president.
Yeah, I mean, you know, should Fauci be heading this up or Mike Pence? I mean, I think at this point I'd have more confidence in Fauci taking the lead and not be sidelined in any way. So hopefully, as unfortunately more cases are diagnosed, even in our own state, I think we're up to 225. You know, those numbers are only going to go up in the short term.
You bet. Okay, Governor Cuomo has introduced New York's clean hand sanitizer made by prisoners. The main reason he was angry over price gouging by brand name hand sanitizers. Some criticize him for using prisoners, calling it slave labor. The sum, not the governor, of course, to make the product. What do you think? And do we see Tom DiNapoli? Do we see price gouging going on with other products right now because of the virus?
There have been some cases. I know in my home county of Nassau, some businesses have been fined. When you're in a crisis, I'm not going to second guess the governor getting more hand sanitizer out there. The discussion of how much you pay prisoners, that's a reasonable discussion to have. I wouldn't worry about having it in the middle of a crisis. If this is helping us get those hand sanitizers out there, certainly, for the state office buildings, we have 1,100 people right there at 110 State Street in Albany. We've been putting more and more of those hand sanitizers out there. We want to be able to get our hands on the product. So if he's helping us get that product, I'm not going to second guess the response. When this all settles down, folks want to talk about what to do with prison labor. That's a reasonable discussion. But let's deal with the crisis. That should be the priority.
What about Charlie? You're supposed to say what Charlie? Charlie on the Charlie on the MTA, and the MTA now the mass transit thing obviously is in great danger. You've been talking about that, right? And you say we got some serious risks there.
Well, when you first raised it, I thought you were talking about the risk of commuters, and obviously the MTA is stepping up in terms of sanitizing and so on. But separate from that, life still goes on, right? So MTA certainly has big budget issues. We all know that. We just put out a report that talks about the growth of debt for the MTA. They have a very ambitious capital program, but the real concern is that debt service is a growing part of their budget. So by that we mean, basically paying for capital commitments, some of which go back many years in the past. And when you spend more and more of your money on debt service, paying for for old bills, less money for current programs. We estimate that debt service for the MTA as a percentage of revenue, it's going to be about 20% will be devoted to debt service by 2023. That's a growing cost, and they have a very ambitious capital program where the state is identifying sources of revenue for it, but they haven't finished all the projects from the previous year's capital program that was set up for 2015, 2019. They do these five-year capital programs. So, a lot of effort to restructure at the MTA. I give the leadership there credit, for working on it, and the board and the governor and Pat Foy and everyone. But in terms of their finances, a lot of it's dependent on debt, and that always is a red flag. And again, what will be the impact on MTA revenues? They depend on people using the trains and the subways. Well, if New York City is canceling all these events, if God forbid it goes further, and you see what's happening in Italy, if we have that New Rochelle, right here in our own state, if we have that kind of a quarantine or containment, what will that do to the projected toll revenue that would have been coming into the MTA? What impact will that have on the budget? So you see the cascading effect. Even on the capital program, we're concerned about the debt related to capital for the MTA. Look what's happening with the bond market right now. They don't know how to price things. So if the MTA wanted to go out and get financing in this environment, are you going to be able to do it? So there were challenges to begin with. Our debt report, was out before all this hit. But it's very clear the MTA is very sensitive to this issue, changes in the economy, and then it has a ripple effect. If people feel they can't use transit to get to work, what does that do? Does that then contribute to a possible recession in our area?
Sure.
Boy,
this is a
tough time for all of us, Alan.
Tom DiNapoli, I got to ask you real quickly about the census. I know that a great deal depends on everybody opening the door, and we think that there are a lot of people who are around who will not open the door and do the census and who do not have, technological know-how to respond to the census on a computer. What do you make of that?
Well, we have to, and I'm so glad you raised the issue because that process is now starting. We've been trying to communicate in any way that we can, including, we did our own little video that we posted. People should not be afraid. First of all, by law, the information that someone would provide on a census can't be used for any purpose, for law enforcement, immigration, anything like that. They don't ask for Social Security numbers. So people should have confidence that when they fill out their form, there's no negative ramification from doing that. But given the environment that we're in now and the rhetoric, you know, from the national administration, I understand the concern, especially if perhaps you live in a neighborhood with a high percentage of immigrants. But why is it so important, Alan? So much of the federal dollars that's reimbursed to states through various programs are tied to what the population is in each state. So if you have an undercount, and we have had communities that historically have been undercounted in our own state, if you have an undercount, you're not going to get your fair share. And as we've talked about on your show in the past, New York continues to, as Pat Moynihan always pointed out, we send more money to D.C. in taxes than we get back in programs or spending from Washington. The way we could start to change that equation a bit would be to make sure that everyone is counted in New York. So please, people, respond to the census, fill out the forms, political representation as well. You know, other states are growing faster than New York. We all know that. We could lose one seat.
Boy, could lose two seats.
I don't want to lose two. I was about to say, I don't want to lose two seats or three seats. And can I say for your upstate listeners particularly, we know what the population shift has been. Not just talking about Washington, but even representation in Albany. I want to make sure, and I'm a downstater, but I want to make sure my constituents upstate that they're all counted, because already there's been a shift, and I want to make sure that upstate is still appropriately represented in our state houses, and that's where that census count is very, very important.
Tom DiNapoli, we are out of time, and I hate that because I love talking to my friend Tom DiNapoli. Our guest has been New York State Comptroller Tom DiNapoli. Comptroller, thanks so much for joining us. It's always such a pleasure to have you here.
Appreciate it. Likewise. We'll do it again soon. Thanks, Alan.